I know why I'm so excited. I'm working this weekend, so. Wah! Get Tom in here.
Big weekend for you because the Oscars are on.
That's right. Yeah. Sunday night. Can't wait.
Very, very excited.
Yeah, I'm sure you are, too.
Yeah. By the way, the eagle poops today.
The eagle poops today.
I have said this to you like six times. Every time I say it to you, you're always like, what, huh? You don't care? You don't know?
I'm always distracted because I think of John Ashcroft, the former attorney general. Remember, he used to sing in that... The eagle flies
No,
imagine John Ashcroft and an American eagle pooping.
Okay, dive in! Whose head would you want to live in? Jacob, whose head would you want to live in for a half an hour? Tom's or mine? Just a half an hour, in and out, easy exit signs. You can get out, you don't have to spend the whole half hour.
Yeah, definitely Tom.
Tom's head. That's a bad answer. Here we go.
Hannah Scott. The eagle poops tonight.
Hannah knows what that's about. She's working class like me. What's the eagle poop? What's that? Good God, I've said this like 10 times on the show, and then people write in. Wow, this really shows you how out of touch you are with the common man.
I am.
It means you get paid. Today is payday.
Listen to you.
It's payday. I honestly didn't know.
Wow. All right. Hey, Hannah. A bunch of stuff's happening in Olympia, which is always a scary thing.
Okay, yeah, some activity. Today is the first policy cutoff day, so there's a lot of activity on votes and stuff today. Yesterday, everything had to have a hearing. With not even a committee hearing, though, yesterday on the House floor, the Long-Term Care Health Act, which we've talked about before, did pass in the House, 63-33. But there was some Republican opposition. Now, remember, this is it's like our paid family leave act, where they will do a mandatory deduction from your paycheck for everyone in the state. It's about $24 a month if you're earning $50,000 a year. That in turn goes into this long-term health care trust fund, where you can have up to a $37,000 benefit over your lifetime to help pay for things like nursing home care, having somebody in your family take care of you at home, meal delivery service, various things like that. They say 7 out of 10 of us are going to need this type of care once we're 65 or older, but almost none of us are preparing for it. So that's the idea behind this. But there's a lot of Republican opposition. It's being called an insurance program. Representative Chris Cory does not think so.
This is not insurance. I repeat, it is not insurance. You may be paying a premium, but the benefits outweigh what you're putting in, and there's no actual back actuarial table to support these numbers. I'm worried that what we're doing is putting a future cost, burden, and frankly, unimaginable debt on our children and their children. What happens when that money runs short, when the benefits outrun the payments in? Those savings from Medicare, are we going to have to reinvest those in here? Are we just spending the same money that we thought we saved? It's really not insurance.
So those were the kind of concerns you heard from 33 that voted against this. There was an effort to try to get an amendment passed to at least do a referendum, put it to a public vote. That did not make it, essentially because they said this is a crisis. We have to start putting money
into
this now.
Call it a crisis. That way we don't really have to think rationally.
But yeah. Why are we playing a clip from he was outvoted 2-1. What is the argument in favor? If it's 63-33, it's clear a lot of Republicans joined with this.
Right, there was absolutely.
Okay, so what's the argument in favor of it?
The argument in favor is everything that I had just said.
It's a crisis, Tom. We need to do something. So we're going to take money from you now, and then when you're older, be there for you. And you'll also, hold on, the craziest thing about this, and you brought this up when we brought this up the first time, you said that doesn't seem like enough money.
$3,700 is
nothing. $37,000. But again,
that's not enough money. No. You even said $37,000.
It's not meant to replace a full-on insurance program. So the idea, here's what has to happen. You want to know the other side? This is Representative Lori Jenkins Bell. She described why this was important with a personal story on the House floor yesterday.
My mother-in-law, Jeanette, she's 93 years old. In her late 80s, she started to get very forgetful. And eventually she couldn't live alone. And my wife and I watched her spend her entire life savings down to nothing until she finally qualified for Medicaid. And then only 3 months after she qualified for Medicaid, her assisted living facility that she was living in announced that they were closing. And so she was left destitute with no money to pay for other services.
So the idea here, and that's a very common thing. You have to do a spend down in order. So if you don't have enough money, you haven't put enough in there. I know because I had to go through it with my own grandmother, right?
Yeah.
We had to spend everything down so she could qualify for Medicaid so she can be in this nursing home. And that the idea here is that that's costly for Medicaid. So this could help offset that because you can use this money to help your daughter or someone like me who was taking care of my grandmother, give them a little income so they can take off time for work. So it's
so maybe a drop in the bucket, $37,000 over a lifetime, but still it's something, I guess.
But, and then there's a lot of concern about at the back end, everybody's going to use this and there's not going to be enough funding for it. How's it going to work out at the end? So that's where we are with that.
Moving
the other big thing is transportation. So a few weeks ago, Senate Transportation Chair Steve Hobbs had this work session throughout this massive 10-year, $16.3 billion transportation environmental package for all this stuff we need done in the state. Just kind of get some feedback, see how people were feeling about it. Maybe it would turn into a bill. Maybe it wouldn't. Positive feedback. So yesterday it turned into a bill.
Think of it as another option in the plate of different options dealing with the environment and infrastructure. The only difference is this is the only one that deals with all of our infrastructure needs and environmental concerns. This is the only one that does that. Plus provides 65,000 jobs too in the meantime.
So here's how we're going to pay for that. That is going to be a carbon fee, carbon tax, which is a $15 per metric ton. And it is also going to be a 6-cent tax in the gas tax hike. There's also tolls for the highway to Trussell. There would be some tolling on the new replacement that they end up building. There's it will double your HOV violations. There's a $0.50 surcharge for Uber rides. There's a slew of different smaller transportation related fees that go into this. And it addresses almost everything we need in the state. The I-5 Columbia Bridge, the Trussell, the widening of 405-522, and improves all of our roads over the next 10 years. And I asked him, you know, what did you hear? What happened between now and your work session that made you think that you could get this whole bill out there? I expected maybe parts. He put it all out, and here's what he said.
If you would have asked me this, like the beginning of session, I'd say, oh, man, this doesn't have a chance, but at least we'll get the discussion going. And now that I have multiple signatures, it's senators from both sides, you know, both caucuses signing on to them. And what a great hearing I had a couple weeks ago. I went, Mom, this thing might have a chance, because I think people out there know that there are needs out there that we need to address. And at the same time, there's these environmental concerns.
So he's feeling pretty confident about it, just, again, in its early stages. And he wants everyone to keep an open mind as it goes through discussions, you know, obviously through the rest of the legislative session. But he's right. There's a lot that needs to be done, and it's not going to go away. So there's got to be a way to come up with paying for it.
All right.
Lastly, the daylight savings bill.
Yes.
Saving bill is moving. It did clear a House committee last night, or Senate committee, I should say.
Why do they argue that it's a good idea?
One of the big arguments is for health reasons, right? It's better for your kids. They have the extra sleep, and that they found that in losing that hour, studies have shown that heart attacks go up, suicides go up, all kinds of various health reasons. That's the reason that they argue for it. They're also trying to do it, I believe, straight up and down. I think Oregon has a bill, and California is already taking it up as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not to go back. I thought it was to keep on daylight saving time all the time.
Right.
So it's not going back to the traditional natural thing. It's we're going to artificially pump it up in an hour, and then we're going to keep it that way forever.
Yes.
That's the argument. Yeah.
Like, so Oregon would be on one time, Washington be on another, Idaho is always 1 hour ahead of us. So
the idea is to have us all do it. Everyone, all of these all states are trying to do this at the same time. So that's the
plan. In the same time.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There are a lot of stuff happening. Plus, also, they're moving a lot of things forward, and I put you in touch with my buddy when it comes to rents and landlord and things like that, because I don't know if we're going to talk about it today. Are we going to get to the fact that Oregon would like to have a...
It's scheduled in the 11 o'clock hour.
Okay.
All right. We make it that far.
Yes. I don't know what's going on in Oregon, but I know that, there's a massive package of
big
bills that
stuff.
Would basically eviction reform package,
right,
along with all of our housing stuff that has been making its way through the House. And I believe there are bills in the Senate, but we haven't heard a lot from the landlords. So I'll be checking into that.
There you go.
Just up next week.
Okay, Scott.
You bet.
Oh, boy.
That's a good one, son.
That's not good. That's not good for Andy from the road less traveled, especially in his weakened condition.
We better hear from
New
him today.
Police in New England say the Patriots owner is charged with soliciting sex.
There's a big sting operation in Florida, apparently, and he was caught up
Imagine
in it.
Imagine that, an old man with a lot of money wanting to get laid. All right, let's see.
Can't go work for
new
KGR,
election.
Though.
Huh?
He can't go work for KGR, though.
Okay, you know, that's not fair. Take a shot at the guy talking about somebody hitting somebody when he's down. Wow. I have a personal vendetta against that guy, and I don't even say that.
That's because you didn't think of it quick enough.
No, I know, because I'm a better man. Quick, Andrew, who's a better man? Never mind.
He's talking.
I knew you weren't listening. New election ordered in North Carolina. Yikes! At the center of the fraud inquiry. The son had to go up and testify against the father. In testimony in the election board, John Harris explains that he tried to warn his dad about election volunteer violations that were occurring.
I love my dad, and I love my mom. Okay. I certainly have no vendetta against them, no family scores to settle. Okay. I think that they made mistakes in this process, and they certainly did things differently than I would have done them. But in thinking about all of this and engaging in this process and watching it all unfold, I've thought a lot more probably about my own little ones than my parents and the world that we're building for them. And I would be frank, Mr. Chairman, watching all this process unfold, we have got to come up with a way to transcend our partisan politics and the exploitation of processes like this for political gain. That goes for both parties, Democrats and Republicans. And libertarians. And frankly, when I'm coming out of this process, I'm just left thinking that we can all do a lot better than this.
So the North Carolina State Board of Elections unanimously voted on Thursday for a new election in the contested House race that has been marred by claims of ballot fraud. What did they say that he did?
Okay, so it's illegal in North Carolina to go around and collect other people's absentee ballots and deliver them to the voting board or whatever. It's illegal to fill out. It's illegal to do anything with absentee ballots. Yep. They have to be dealt with separately. And this Republican hired a guy who's notorious for doing that very thing. Uh-huh. And they have all this evidence that established, for instance, they mentioned that in this one district. Where it was like 61% of the absentee ballots were for Republicans, whereas the normal ballots were only 19% of the Republicans.
Well, maybe so they really liked this Harris fellow.
They were stacking it, and they held out. This has been a scandal going on. They've not seated. The Republican was ahead by 905 mm-hmm. votes, but there were so many bogus absentee ballots. So they put him on the stand, and he kept hemming and hawing and kind of lying, in effect, until his son finally came up and said, "Dad, I told you that's what this guy does. What are you doing? I'm so..." And they said the dad is weeping
crying.
And stuff. Yes. Yeah. They put him on the stand, and he said one thing. He said, "Oh, no, that's not right." And then they took a break. He went out, and then he came back and says, "I would like to apologize. I did not. I have been misleading the board. I want to take back everything I said this morning from the stand. I call for new elections, everybody." Uh-huh. And so they get it. That's what's interesting about this case, is that it's a huge political scandal. And here's what's interesting, because the Republicans are in bad straits now, although it's a Republican-ish district, and it is in North Carolina. The question is he going to run again? Mm-hmm. His reputation is now so badly tarnished mm-hmm. that if he ran again, my guess, I don't know, but my guess is if it was as close as it was now, that he would lose the election. So then the question is, would they put a different Republican up against the Democrat who might have won? So it
wouldn't do well for the Republic to come back in. I think the stink ends up hanging over the party.
Yeah, I wonder.
That's
so anyway,
people end up feeling. Firstborn children are.
I think this story deserves as much coverage as the Smollett case. By the way,
which one? The one about firstborn children?
No. The case about North Carolina voter fraud. Everyone claims, "Oh no, this doesn't happen." Here's a prime example.
It happened to Dino Rossi coverage. With Gregoire.
Nice try.
Yeah. Come on. Voter fraud does happen.
Yeah, in this case, on the Republican side.
Yeah, they got on the Republican side, yeah. Let's see. You want to do the firstborn? We have time for this one? Yeah, let's do it real fast. Firstborn children, smarter than siblings. Secondborn are more likely to cause trouble. This is research that has come out, and I guess these are easy things to track. You just look at the kids, and you find out who spent time in jail, and then you find out when the kid was born in the birth order.
And the thing is, I love this kind of story because I'm the oldest of five siblings. I love to rib my brothers whenever it comes out that the oldest is somehow better, in this case, smarter. Well, that's obvious, right, Joe? But the idea is that I've got brothers that I think are defined by their birth order. I love these kinds of stories. But to me, the most interesting new development in this University of Edinburgh story is that the reason the second born or the third born, they don't act as well as the firstborn is, The role model is what? When you're the firstborn, the only role models you have in your family are the parents.
Yeah.
So you model yourself after the parents. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you are the – so Joe, my my brother, my next oldest brother, I'm 2 years older than them. And he says, so basically, when you're younger than your next sibling, your older sibling is going to role model for you. So you may have a bratty 2-year-old role modeling how you're supposed to act. Mm-hmm. And so those kids are going to be modeling not just their parents but the bratty older sibling. And so it comes to the defense of younger siblings.
Right. Plus, if your older brother ends up getting more attention for getting A's and being good, and you want attention, everybody wants attention. Good attention, bad attention. This is all it is about, is attention.
Yeah.
It's a form of love. It can be filtered into feeling like love is attention. Then you're the one that throws the ball through the window. You're the one that runs away. You're the one that fires off bottle rockets and
because
stuff like that.
If you're not going to get patted on the back for being good,
you're going to get attention
for being bad.
You'd rather have attention than neglect.
Yes.
Neglect, absence of any sort of attention is actually worse than someone being yelled at constantly.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
There we are. That's our life. I, the middle child.
Well, you're supposed to be the peacemaker. You don't look like a peacemaker to me.
What's a peacemaker crap?
Well, yeah.
Between who and who? Between what war and factions?
If you're the middle child, then you're always trying to negotiate between the older child and the baby, and then you're the one in between. So you're supposed to be the not you.
No, that's for
you're a classic second child.
That's for people that can't cause enough trouble. Then they go, well, I can't get in trouble for that, so I'm going to do the whole peacemaker thing.
Yeah, I see.
Bad choices make for great stories. When it comes to morbid curiosity, they think that's the only thing that reasonable people will tune into the Oscars. They want to see a train wreck. It's so bad, it was good, would be the general idea. More people might tune in this year than in previous years because there's been so much talk about how horrible the show will be.
That's right. With no host, they've tried. I know, we're going to get popular by naming a most popular film. No, that's a dumb idea. Yeah, you're right, that's a dumb idea. Okay, now we're not going to show all of the awards. We're going to take out 4 and run during commercial breaks. No, that's a bad idea. Oh, yeah, that's right, that's a bad idea. Everything they try to do seems to fall on its face, so the suggestion is maybe this is brilliant programming. It sounds like it's going to be a fiasco, like people can't turn away from a bad car accident. Mm-hmm. Maybe people will tune in to see how bad it is. I don't think people will tune in to see how good or bad it is. It's slowly going down.
Hey, Jacob, where's the story that I spent like 10 minutes working on about the bus thing and the?
Oh no! Well, we can try to get to it. We'll talk about that later.
I got a whole thing.
I know we were supposed to start the show with that, but then we had Hannah with better stuff, according to you.
No, wait a minute. No.
You wanted the legislative stuff, I thought.
I did that, but I didn't know we were going to get rid of the bus stuff.
We're waiting for better bus stuff.
Jacob, are we going to... I have an interesting proposal, which I think Tom will find shocking and will agree with me.
That sounds intriguing.
Not really, but this is fine.
That's right.
It's fine 3 minutes.
No train wreck.
That nonsense. All right. New York Times guy says, listen, let's not abolish billionaires. Let's just, determine who deserves it and who doesn't. Like J.K. Rowling, is that her name?
Rowling, yeah.
Rowling, okay. Does she deserve her money, or does the guy that invented some sort of fancy medical device deserve his money? Because he
keeps people alive.
Oh, boy. All right, right back. Interesting take on this, right at the house. Laura's Home Loans. Thanks, Laura Keel, for sponsoring the Tom and Curley Show. Laura's Home Loan. 833-ASK-LAURA. 833-ASK-LAURA. That's right. Dun, dun, dun. Hey, is Rachel Bell coming in today?
It's Friday.
Oh, no, it's Friday.
She doesn't work on Friday.
Like Johnny Carson.
Yeah, that's right.
Remember that when Johnny stopped working Fridays? Like, jeez.
Big deal.
Really weird thing about Johnny Carson. How come he could never... Why did he always have to ask Freddie, the producer, whether they could do 2 extra dinners at the Coconut Room? Remember that?
No.
The person would win something, stump the band.
Oh, is that right?
And then he'd go, can we do 2? Can we? Because there's 4 of them. We can? We can't. We can do 2. Can we do 2 more? Like, what? You're on the air negotiating a $50 dinner at the Coconut Room or something? It was the weirdest thing. My brother's like, doesn't Johnny have enough power that he can just make 2 more dinners show up?
Wow, you figured out a way to get your Johnny Carson invitation in there, John. That's pretty
impressive.
One
more time today.
Now, can you do Kevin Spacey doing Johnny Carson? Because he was the most popular.
Is there a video
imitator of
Kevin Spacey doing Johnny Carson?
Yes, there is. On the Tonight Show, no less.
On the couch?
Where else? Oh, my God.
Wow, double entendre.
Yeah,
All right. Don't abolish billionaires. This is a piece in the New York Times. I guess because there's so many people. What was it? A a billionaire is a sign of a policy failure was a tweet that was sent out by a guy that works for a Democratic Socialist Cortez.
Dan Riffle.
Yes.
Yeah. And the idea is, so I think this is an interesting article, and it goes through a number of sort of gradations of argument. Right now, he says, it's very popular to bash billionaires right now. And he mentions, and who wouldn't want to bash somebody like Howard Schultz? It's disgusting. And the way the president kind of, you know, runs the roost of the kind of the certain 1% class, and then the philandering Jeff Bezos, as he calls it. So it's easy to bash billionaires.
Yeah.
And he says, I understand that. However, and he mentions Bernie Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez as being kind of like the face of that billionaire bashing. But he says, you know, let's step back a bit and ask this question. He says, first off, where are the happiest, healthiest, wealthiest, freest, and longest living people in the world? Mm. They happen to be in, he says, there's no pithy word for this, in countries with liberal democratic welfare state capitalism. Mm-hmm. And there's a social democratic version of that. And so what are we talking about? Sweden, Norway, and the Netherlands, or in English-speaking versions, Canada, New Zealand, and the United States, that they are the best places to live.
Right.
And son of a gun, if they don't have not the most billionaires, but they have a lot more billionaires than a lot of other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, even places like Sweden and Norway per capita have more billionaires than even the United States.
Yeah.
So clearly, this kind of system can't be that bad, can't be immoral. There must be something good that comes out of it. So he establishes, first off, let's not kind of badmouth billionaires. But he does say, now, there are distinctions.
But he does do that. He does say most of them, use the word most, you know, cheat, steal, lie, scam. He does that in the second or third paragraph.
He says some do.
Oh, some.
Most. Yeah. Okay. Yes. And he says, now, granted, there are billionaires that get their wealth through corruption.
All right.
He says, but let's set those guys aside.
All right, let's get to it. Because you can talk and talk and talk about this. So get to the points that you actually like that he brings up in this thing.
Well, first off, that's the first good point.
We're going to run out of time. Go ahead.
Then you take the second point then.
His first point is that it is okay to be a billionaire
because
it does exist in other places.
In good places.
Then he gets into the idea of taxing. Take money from the billionaires and then we would all be better off. And then he points to places like Sweden and Norway and other places like that. You can be a billionaire. And if we take $12 billion from you and you still have $22 billion left over, it's okay because then the rest of us are doing okay and doing better because we've taken some from you. So the redistribution, there's nothing wrong with it. The billionaire will survive and will have just as much as he needs. So there's no need to attack him. Keep him there and just allow the golden goose to lay the eggs.
Yeah, so that's what I was just saying. Then he makes a distinction between us. Good billionaires and bad billionaires.
Right.
A billionaire who just makes money and does this entrepreneurial stuff.
This is the best part.
Yes. And he says, but then the problem is that we give them, they're too freewheeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gives a couple of examples. So he says, no one would begrudge this guy who's this big shot doctor. He's a spinal surgeon and inventor worth an estimated $1.8 billion. He holds hundreds of patents on medical devices. Now he says, what he did is he saved hundreds of thousands of people's lives, you know, the discomfort and all that, because he helped with spinal surgery, and that's a great thing. So he deserves a lot of his money.
Yeah.
However, because he has so many patents now, nobody else can use his ideas and capitalize on top of those ideas.
Yeah.
And he says, maybe the guy is worth his billions, yes, but at this point, we should loosen the patents. So instead of having patents for however many years, 20 or 40 years, encourage more innovation based on his innovation and allow more people to make money on this device. So let's say he has a patent for 10 years instead of 40, then that would encourage more people to be. And he says, what you want to do is you want to encourage people to be economic engines. An entrepreneurial spirit is dampened by patents. Same thing with somebody like J.K. Rowling. Nobody begrudges J.K. Rowling all the fortune she made with Harry Potter. However, when it comes to licensing merchandise after that, he says, maybe we could trim that and say, you can get all your fortune out of the Harry Potter books, but the fact that no one else can do anything with Harry Potter, you know, in perpetuity because you own the rights, maybe we ought to loosen that and let her keep all of her millions from writing the books, but not allow for those kinds of restrictions of access to her characters afterwards.
So he wants to sort of tinkle around the edges when it comes to patents and how long you can have it for.
That's right. Yeah. So there's sort of modifications.
Yeah.
So you allow for a billionaire to exist and profit from good stuff, but not from things that extend on in perpetuity.
He also interesting that he brings up the argument that he would like government to be more involved. My biggest problem is that if you have a one-stop shop, which is if you're a billionaire and you've got a bunch of lobbyists and you can pay them to go to Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. controls more and more and more of what's happening in the marketplace, then you have more influence. But if you broke it up and put it back to the states and allow states to have more power and limited the federal government, it makes it much harder for the billionaire to have his lobbyists go to each and every single state. So then the advantage is that it's just harder for the guy to go in there and push for particular laws to benefit him or her. The other part of the argument that I always had trouble with in his piece is the three words that he puts in there: moral, first of all, according to who moral, and fair, according to who fair. Whenever the government gets into the business of moral, what is moral and what is not, and what is fair and what is not, well, then, and then the other word he uses is greedy. To me, that's the craziest word that is in the entire piece. Who determines what greedy is? If you had a seat, Tom, and you're sitting up in the 300 section to watch LeBron James play, and someone said to you, hey, you want this seat to sit right down front? Absolutely you would. Does that make you greedy? Does somebody can make more money in order to be repaid for the work that they do? Are they greedy? Who determines greed? Who determines morality, moral issues? And then who determines fair? The government? You want to elect someone to say what is fair?
Well, you know, we are the government, but
no,
that's
we are
not
the
actually
government.
His argument.
Use an argument other than that, because that is so capricious. There is no way. We are not the government, Tom. We're not the government. We are not the government.
In a democratic, what do they call this, a liberal, socialist, capitalist system,
right.
We are the freest.
Where
and that's 85%
of incumbents are reelected. So forget the government part of it, but go ahead. But other than that, who determines what fair is?
Well, first off, we do as voters. But I want to back off on this idea, John. He's using morally appropriate, adopting the language of the left that's bashing billionaires and putting in quotes. He says, no, he's not after any morality. What he's after is, what he wants to do is aim to channel entrepreneurial energy into productive wealth. And that's what he says these rules protecting billionaires is getting in the way of. So a billionaire should be able to make his billions, but he shouldn't be able to control it in perpetuity. And ironically, you bring up government. He's not pro-government. One of the problems, he said, patents are government-sponsored things. We shouldn't allow the government to have, set up this patent situation. So he's not calling for more government control, and he's not calling for morality. He's calling for what would be the best generator of income and wealth in this country. Economically, what's best for this country, and it's not to have these billionaires sitting on their wealth and not letting anybody have access to it.
They have access to it. Billionaires,
no, they don't. Not through patents and not through copyright laws.
Listen, the patent thing goes this way. The business comes up with an idea. The capitalists go ahead and say, how much is it going to cost you to produce that? The guy says, X. How much profit can you make? I can make X times this. How long will you be protected by the patent in order to produce X? I got 10 years. So 10 years with your capital will get us X on the way out.
That's right.
The guy that wants to spend the money, that's the billionaire that creates more jobs, looks at those numbers and goes, I don't know if you're going to be able to make it back in 10 years. But if you found out all of a sudden you'd only had the patent for 6 years, it would just squeeze the amount of people that want to invest in it and risk their capital on something that may or may not work.
No, I know. I think that's true. He would not. He's not arguing getting rid of patents. He's just saying maybe we've overshot our copyright laws. Maybe we've overshot in terms of how long these patents could be good for because they don't generate enough economic wealth. Uh-huh. It all is just in the hands of one.
Right.
He would not want to say, okay, no patents are ever allowed because no one would ever have time or money to invest. So it's a balancing act, and he just says yes. So in other words, he's not against
billionaires. Why does he begrudge that J.K. Rowling? So what if she can make dolls and other things like that?
Because he says it gets in the way of the economic engine of the economy. And he says that's really what he's after. So there'll be more billionaires or more really rich people if they're allowed to capitalize on this. That's John, I think he's more in your camp than not.
I looked up millionaires. 80% of millionaires are first generation.
Yeah?
Crazy? Yeah. They work hard for it. Right back. You didn't get a chance to really get to hear Jacob's pitch on because
that's
you were
right.
Busy with your Oscar talk on the morning show. Hey, by the way, congratulations for you doing 4 hours with Andy, Todd, Mike, and none of them were there.
It's a long show. I announced at the 6 o'clock hour, Todd, if this was the Tom and Curly show, I'd be done. We had a whole other hour to go.
Nearly naked man covered in peanut butter visits a Dallas dog park. Well, I think we can all relate to this one. Here we go.
They say dogs can tell what we're thinking. Well, Steven Shrout wonders, My strategy was to do it as fast as possible and hope that not as many people would see me, you know?
If some canines at this dog park in Deep Ellum knew he lost a bet.
All right, let me ask you, Tom. Just, we're going to get to the story. Just by the sound of this guy's voice from WFAA, will there be some type of pun or something funny at the end of this piece? 1 minute and 2 seconds left. Will he wrap it up with some sort of dog peanut butter joke or something?
My guess, he will, but it'll be a bad joke or a bad pun.
I have not heard it either, and I agree.
Last week,
there was a couple walking down the sidewalk, and they both said, ew! And they walked by so fast after that.
You see, Shrout came in dead last playing fantasy football with his friends.
It was my first year in fantasy football.
And this year, in his league, if you have the worst record, you either pay the winner $250 or...
I would have to lather myself up in peanut butter, wearing nothing but a gold Speedo, and go to a dog park.
So... Shrout chose the peanut butter.
It took me about 45 seconds to apply it to my whole body.
Of course, his friends filmed the whole thing. You can even see some curious noses following Shrout around, wanting a taste. And owners?
They were so in shock.
Will Shrout play fantasy football again next year?
7 seconds. You want to change your bet?
Yes.
I will, but I can't say that's going to be with the same guys.
Wiser than he looks.
Boy. He didn't even
make
an
effort. Well,
Matt
got tired at the end. Matt Allerton from WFAA got tired at the end.
Yeah, that's it. But, I give up. I think this is actually a cute story.
It is.
The headline, Nearly Naked Man Covered in Peanut Butter Visits Dallas Dog Park. I was envisioning some kind of mentally ill guy, and I said, why are you even doing this story? I think it's hilarious. Dogs love peanut butter. I love this idea that a peanut butter man is walking through a dog park with all these dogs, you know, yeah, licking his ankles and all this.
Yeah.
Pretty clever that it was a lost bet.
I have something to add to this, but I don't know if it's appropriate.
Okay.
Hey, Andrew, can you play some music? Because I need to ask Jacob something if I could tell this story. Just anything you have. Just press a button for music because I got to ask Jacob something. Yeah. And I'm surprised you don't get this. Can you hang on for a second?
Okay.
All right. Okay. Jacob, hang on. All right, stop.
I hope all of that was off air.
Did any of that make it on the air?
Yes. No, just kidding.
No.
I look up and that on-air button was still on.
That was like your thing.
I know it was.
Very, very gently.
Yes.
This was a challenge a lot of guys would do or make fun of each other doing.
Yes.
But it wasn't over your whole body.
It wasn't the whole body, yes.
All right, good. Well, you know what? You are such a prude for somebody who's 24 years old.
He's the reason we're still on the air.
No wonder that girl broke up with you.
Oh, God.